Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. It has now been 33 days since Maryland was able to safely enter stage three of our Maryland Strong Roadmap to Recovery, and all businesses in the state of Maryland were able to open. Since then, we've continued to see improving trends with our health metrics. Our statewide seven-day positivity rate is now down to 2.9%, which is a decline of nearly 90% since it peaked at 26.91% 173 days ago on April 17th. And the state of Maryland has now completed more than 2.7 million COVID-19 tests, and testing continues to be one of our most critical tools to find and fight this virus. And we're encouraging all Marylanders to get tested. I also want to remind Marylanders that there is less than a week remaining to register to vote in the November election. And the deadline for voter registration is next Tuesday, October 13th. All mail-in ballot requests are due no later than Tuesday, October 20th. And in-person early voting begins on Monday, October 26th. So I want to again, strongly encourage all Marylanders to vote and to take advantage of voting by absentee ballot or to participate in early voting. And for those who really want to vote in person on Election Day, we strongly encourage you to do so at off-peak times to avoid long lines and potential crowds at polling centers. And finally, since March, the nation's governors have been urging the White House and leaders on both sides of the aisle in both houses of Congress to try to reach some type of bipartisan consensus and to finalize an agreement to provide desperately needed additional federal funding for the states to recover from the COVID-19 global pandemic. As chairman of the National Governors Association, I secured commitments from the president and vice president to support this relief and worked with congressional leaders and members of the Problem Solvers Caucus. Yesterday, the president cut off bipartisan negotiations until after the election. Washington's continued failure to pass this much-needed relief is already harming our nation's health and our economic recovery. The American people cannot afford to wait until after the election. There's no shortage of really good bipartisan and common-sense proposals. And so once again, I'm urging all of our leaders in Washington to put aside the politics and to get this done for the American people. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Madam Treasurer?
Thank you, Governor. It's good to be here. I hope that you and the other governors can work some sense into people at the White House. You seem to have made progress on the Hill. And we all appreciate that. I was just going to note, as you did, that the registration deadline is the 13th. Mr. and Mrs. Kopp voted as soon as we could at a beautiful drop box at Walt Whitman High School. It was huge, and they tell me that it quickly fills up. I think that's wonderful. I see that the Board of Elections has an item on the agenda, and maybe later they could bring us up to date on the latest statistics regarding the mail-in voting requests and where we are in terms of when we start the counting, whether counting has started. I know the legal first day was the 1st of October. That's just terrific. Let's keep, as the comptroller said at the last meeting, keep our fingers crossed and hope everything goes smoothly and well. And it's good to be back.
It's good to be with you. I'll say, Mr. and Mrs. Hogan also have their ballots sitting on the table at home. They came in the mail yesterday. We have not yet filled them out or dropped them in the drop box yet, but hopefully I'll get a chance to do that pretty quickly. So thank you very much, Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you very much, Governor, and good morning, Madam Treasurer. And yes, I have my absentee ballot filled out, and it's sitting on the passenger side of the front seat of the car I drove down today. I'm going to drive back after this and put it in the drop box at the Tacoma Park Community Center. There are two drop boxes there. One is for the Tacoma Park local election. They have not yet mailed out the ballots, but they're going to mail it to everybody in Tacoma Park. And then right next to it is the other drop box that is the right one for me to put my absentee ballot in. My wife reports that there is a little handwritten note on the state drop box saying presidential election with an arrow pointed down into the drop box. So hopefully I'll pick the right drop box, get my absentee ballot in there. Thank you, Madam Treasurer, for reminding me. If I could just make a short statement about the Board of Revenue estimates. Obviously, we met Secretary Brinkley and Treasurer Kopp and myself to revise the projections for fiscal year 2021 and fiscal year 2022. While the projections for the current and the upcoming fiscal years are better than we expected, we cannot and must not interpret this temporary bit of good news to mean that the worst is behind us as far as the economic consequences. The only thing that is certain during this COVID era is that we continue, obviously, it's glaringly apparent to people that we have a highly unpredictable, rapidly evolving situation in our nation's history. The good news is that it appears that the federal direct stimulus payments, the Paycheck Protection Program, and the $600 federal weekly unemployment subsidy worked as they were intended. And they temporarily prevented what could have been a catastrophic economic crash. Absent the federal aid package that passed in the spring to assist families, small businesses, and the more than 1.1 million Marylanders who have filed for unemployment, our experts believe that this revenue outlook would have been far worse without that federal stimulus plan. These latest revenue figures highlight the tremendous success of the federal stimulus programs, underscores the need, as the governor just noted, underscores the need for a second round as we head into a winter of public health and economic uncertainty. I can't emphasize enough, the first stimulus has ended, basically. We need that second stimulus yesterday in order to maintain our economic stability. Because we need to not only infuse more federal financial assistance to our small businesses, unemployed citizens, and working families, but we need to rebuild both the confidence and purchasing power of the American and Maryland consumers. Without a second stimulus package, we're taking a tremendous economic risk as we head into the winter. So we don't know if the second economic shutdown will be necessary to protect the resurgence in the COVID cases. Treasurer nicely mentioned how I have my fingers crossed. I have my fingers crossed, my toes crossed, my arms crossed, and everything else if there's not a second wave. But if there is, and Congress fails to enact a second stimulus package sooner rather than later, the worst case assertion that scenario that we've been able to prevent from happening will most likely come to fruition. So, Governor, let me once again call on the Congress with you. Thank God you were the head of the NGA and put together this package. Ask them to put down the partisan swords and come together to pass a second much-needed stimulus package and, most importantly, an aid package to state and local governments, as you have so repeatedly mentioned, is just an absolute necessity. And that's blue states and red states. I'd also like to, with all due respect, renew my call to you and the General Assembly to direct our $585 million general fund balance, which was there as of June 30th, for something I call the Small Business Rescue and Stimulus Program. We quite literally cannot afford to lose more of our small businesses in Maryland. And without immediate action at the federal and state levels, frankly, we're gambling with the economic future, fiscal health of our state, hardworking Marylanders, and the small businesses that power our economy. Governor, I know you're a big champion and advocate of small businesses. I don't mean to get into a back and forth. I just want to say we're talking about tens of thousands of small businesses that are hanging on by a thread. I know your administration has tried to do some things, but we really now know that the federal system worked. I believe we need to step up with a scaled-down version of that program at the state level. And I offer that with all due respect, because fundamentally I think you and your team have done a very commendable job as far as trying to protect the public in Maryland from the pandemic and also maintain our economic stability. The problem is that folks in Washington have messed the whole thing up. Thank you very much for letting me make a statement, and look forward to this meeting.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Comptroller. Let's go ahead and get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Hi, good morning, Governor Hogan, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. There are 23 items on the Secretary's agenda and 8 reports of emergency procurement. Items 2, 10, and emergency report A3 have been revised. I'm happy to assist with answering any questions.
Yeah, thank you. I think, as the Treasurer pointed out earlier, while we have the State Board of Elections here for item A8, I'd like to ask for an update on the preparations for the general election, if we could. I know Nikki Charlson is here with us, I believe.
Correct, Governor, along with Administrator Linda Lomona.
Okay, great. So I don't know if they want to give us an update, or I've got a couple of questions maybe we can cover. Are they on? I don't hear them or see them.
Good morning. This is Linda Lomona, Administrator of Elections. Governor?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. Would you like to update first, or would you like to ask your question?
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you just give us a kind of an update of where we are on the election? I think everybody's, you know, anxious to hear.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Governor, for your help with the National Voter Registration Day promotion. That was very helpful. And thank you all for your kind words this morning about your mail-in ballots. Excuse me, no longer calling them absentee. We're well underway, and we're just about ready to rock and roll here. We've added a couple election day vote centers and ballot drop-off boxes in the recent weeks. There's still 81 early voting centers. There are now 321 election day vote centers. Two were added in Wicomico County, and we accommodated the residents of Smith Island with one as well because of obviously their difficulties in commuting to the mainland. We added one additional box in Baltimore City. And our voter lookup system now includes maps of each location for the voting and the ballot drop-off boxes that give easy directions to the sites. The first delivery of ballot drop-off boxes is complete. Every local board of elections and early voting center now has one, and the more boxes will be delivered next week. We had to order them in stages because the manufacturer capability to produce them. The voter lookup system and the list of ballot drop-off locations include when each box will be available for use. And, of course, once they're available, they'll be open 24/7 until 8 o'clock or when the polls close on election day. The number of voters requesting mail-in ballots is phenomenal. As of today, I believe the local boards have processed over 1.2 million applications. Our data processing center at the Motor Vehicle Administration has been open 2 weeks now. They're doing a fabulous job of averaging about 7,000 applications a day. The first set of ballots was shipped on September the 24th, and they're being shipped daily now. Over 800,000 ballot packets have been shipped, and mailings will continue until about 10 days before Election Day. While the local boards are doing all that with the applications and the absentee ballots coming in, they're preparing voting equipment for early voting and Election Day. The ballots for early voting and Election Day, about 19 million sheets, are being printed and being delivered to the local boards. We hope for delivery to be complete next week for all 24 jurisdictions. Our voter statewide effort to educate voters continues. Right now, the messages are about voter registration and requesting a ballot, but they'll soon shift to voting in person and returning ballots. As you all noted, the local boards are gearing up to start counting the ballots this month. A few of them started earlier this week. Montgomery County, I think, started yesterday. The results, of course, will be embargoed until election night, but allowing them to start early will help us ensure that we have some meaningful results election night and that we'll meet the various deadlines in Maryland law and the federal deadline for the Electoral College. As you all noted, the governor already, I was going to mention the important deadlines coming up, but governor, thank you. You did that for me. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you for that. That has answered a lot of my questions. The one question I have is, I know early on there was concern about not having enough, election judges, and we went out and recruited tens of thousands of them. And I'm still hearing that some people have never been contacted or that they haven't been trained by the local election board. Can you tell me where we stand with all the potential help we need at the voting centers and whether people have been contacted or trained yet?
Well, the first question, I think all the local boards are very comfortable with the numbers of people that they have available to them. Part of the problem was, thanks to you, Governor, they were overwhelmed with requests, and which is a good thing. It was just wonderful to see so many people interested in helping. What happened in some of the jurisdictions is they were trying to schedule their classes and not having to provide two notices. One, yes, we want you to, here's your class. So they waited to send a notice to folks to say, okay, Ms. Lamone, you're an election judge at our elementary school, and your training class will start on October the 15th. That was probably not the best way to handle it, but that's the way it was done at the county, at some of the county levels, and people are still getting notices and still being thanked. I forgot your second question.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Glad to hear we have plenty of folks that work the polls. I don't have any other questions. Anybody, my colleagues have any questions?
Yes, I have a few questions. Thank you. Madam Treasurer, I don't mean to step in front of you. You disappeared from the screen, so I hope everything's okay.
I'm having a little trouble, but I can hear you.
Okay, excellent. So here we are 27 days away from the November 3rd election. At the last board meeting, Lieutenant Governor Rutherford was chairing, I made a famous pledge to come over, you know, as skeptic as I am that this election's going to be smooth and straightforward, because always something seems to happen in Maryland. I'm happy to follow through on my commitment, which is if it goes smoothly, I'm going to come over with several cases of Maryland craft beer and give it to your staff and thank them on behalf of the state. But I continue to be concerned about the mechanics of what we're talking about. You mentioned that I think we have you said 1.2 million. I think the number is 1.3 million requests for absentee ballots, and 800,000 have been delivered. When is the remainder of the requests? When are they going to be fulfilled?
So, Mr. Comptroller, Nikki Charlson with the State Board of Elections. So it's a rolling basis. There are ballots being shipped, ballot packets being shipped every day. So the 800,000 is more than that now. It's changing. The company that Taylor or Curtis 1000, as it is on the agenda, it's all the same company. It's a subsidiary, and Curtis 1000 does the work. So the contract is with them. They are producing thousands of packets every day, and we are tracking them file by file and monitoring to make sure that the number of records that we are sending to voters are turning into packets being mailed, being shipped to Maryland, and then entering the mail stream. So the numbers are always changing. We are sending files regularly, and they are shipping them regularly.
Okay. And you mentioned the new contract that we're approving today. It looks like it's a company down in Georgia, but apparently it's owned by the Minnesota company that we have a contract with. Can you just explain what the relationship is between these two companies?
Sure, of course. It's a good question, and we've had the same question ourselves. So Taylor is the Minnesota company. They have 5 subsidiaries or business units, and Taylor is sort of the branded name of the company. Curtis 1000 is one of those subsidiaries, one of the 5 or one of the 5 business units. And the way their corporate structure works is that the company that is performing the work, or the business unit, I'm sorry, that is performing the work, is the name on the contract. So Curtis 1000, that business unit, is producing and shipping our packets. And so the contract is with Curtis, but it is with the broader umbrella company of Taylor. I hope that helps a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little confusing, but as long as the printing is being done under your supervision in Minnesota, I take it, this has not been moved down to Georgia, I hope. And when you say the ballots are being driven over to Maryland post offices, I hope that's still the case. Is it?
Yeah, so our ballots, our ballot production and shipping is all coming out of Minnesota, and they are shipping via truck into Maryland and entering them directly into the United States postal system locally here in Maryland.
Okay, and can you guys estimate or commit that you're going to have these absentee ballots tabulated or screened or whatever the process is, so that they can be reported at 8 o'clock on election day?
So yeah, that's go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
That's one of the reasons the local boards, the state board authorized the local boards to start counting earlier. So as Linda said earlier, that some of the counting has started. And so over the next 26 days, the local boards will be counting ballots so that once the polls close on election day, there will be some results from mail-in ballots released along with early voting results. And then later that night, election day results.
Well, if you could keep the board.
I'm sorry, Mr. Comptroller. I didn't hear the rest. I'm assuming you're asking for us to keep you updated, and yes, of course we will.
Technical difficulties. I will work with his staff to see if we can get him back online.
Comptroller is pretty good at doing that kind of thing. Like, you stand like a statue, and it looks like he's not even moving. I don't know how he did that.
Well, I was going to ask Nikki or Linda, what would be warning flag? What are you looking at, other than the obvious thing like not ballots not being delivered? What are you looking at as indicators of smooth or less than smooth going?
So Nikki Charleston, I'm happy to answer that. And then Linda, if I missed something, feel free to jump in. I think we are tracking and monitoring the number of requests for mail-in ballots coming in. The data center, through the terrific support of GBM and MVA, has been a huge help, as Linda mentioned, allowing us to process more. The local boards are working very hard to get those applications in. We're averaging about 35,000 a day statewide. The data centers are responsible for a portion of that. So we're watching that. We're obviously monitoring the progress of performing the pre-election testing that Linda has mentioned. That's getting the voting units all ready for election day. And there's a lot of units to prepare. And it's because we're doing precinct level results, which I know lots of people are excited about, it does take the prep time a little bit more. So we're monitoring that closely to make sure that the equipment will all be ready for transportation. And, of course, managing the transportation contract with the ballot drop-off boxes. We have 2 deliveries coming up this month, and then we have lots of deliveries with early voting and election day. So those are some of the logistics that we're monitoring to make sure we're on schedule, all of which are important for voting to start, obviously, on the 26th with early voting and then running through November 3rd.
Okay. And you've got plans, or at least know where to try to go if the warning flags do go up.
We do. Right. So we are trying to track these as far enough as possible so we have time to respond. And we're in contact with the local boards regularly and looking at data daily and our vendors regularly as well.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Are we still trying to get the comptroller back for his question?
I was told 2 minutes, Governor. That was about to.
Very good.
Well, let me say, Governor, I'm sure that we will have some glitches, but when you read about some other states, like Texas, for instance, where they seem to be going out of their way to make voting difficult for people, like one center per county, I think Maryland is doing well.
Well, we're doing everything we can to encourage everybody to vote and make sure every single vote is counted. It's important, and I know everybody's been working hard. I guess I share some of the comptroller's concerns. I'm not sure I'm a skeptic, but I'm keeping everything, my fingers crossed, that we can pull it off without a hitch. But I know everybody's been trying their best to, under very difficult circumstances, to make sure we can conduct a fair election.
I was just told 2 more minutes from the comptroller's office. If there's another item you wanted to discuss on the secretary's agenda, maybe come back to this one, or we can.
I don't want to skip it if he's not going to be on, but he had a question I know on this item, but we can do that. We could go to any other questions on the secretary's agenda if the treasurer has any, and we'll wait for the comptroller.
I have, it's not a question, but a point. We again, Governor, have a couple of projects from the Department of Housing and Community Development, items 8 and 9, where the department is pointing out the energy saving and environmental preserving aspects of the program. And I just want to thank Secretary Holt and his department for keeping on that. Having said that, I hope that the DHCD and other departments are getting ready to report how their projects fit in with Maryland's goal to achieve electrification of buildings, most particularly in the first instance, state buildings, when we do new projects. In order to meet the greenhouse gas goals, we are going to have to move from fossil fuel to renewable. We are going to have to move to electrically heated and cooled buildings. And it seems to me that we should not be looking at any significant projects without asking how they are contributing to that goal. Because if we don't do it, we won't meet our goals. We won't. If we can't electrify the transportation and the building programs of the state, at the very least, there's no way we're going to meet our goals. Just saying thank you to the secretary and keep at it. The comptroller is back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Comptroller.
Mike Lazarus coming back from the dead here. How is everybody? I apologize.
Welcome back. I know you had a question regarding the State Board of Elections.
Thank you, Governor. I just wanted to finish up. I understand from some newspaper articles that some of the, I guess not the absentee ballots, but the internet votes over the internet need to be reviewed by a Republican judge and a Democratic judge. What is the situation and how many ballots are those, and are they going to be able to be processed during the time between now and the election?
So, Nikki Charlson, yes, there are web-delivered ballots or internet-delivered ballots. They are not able to be scanned by our voting equipment. The voting equipment requires very precise paper thickness and markings, and ballots that we print at home just don't meet those standards. So they do have to be duplicated by a team of two election officials. And as of now, it's about 10% of our requests, a little bit less than 10% of our requests are our web delivery ballots. It's about 135,000 statewide. And so the counties will, as part of their counting process, will be duplicating those ballots. I know, for example, Montgomery County Board of Elections has taken over a rec center, and they'll be doing the duplication in that large room there. So they will need to be duplicated before they're scanned, and the local boards are scheduling those now. I don't know for sure whether what percentage of those will be ready as part of the election night results. Part of that will depend on how quickly they come back from voters. But the counties, they are prepared for this. They do this every election. And the numbers are obviously a little bit higher than normal because we have more people voting by mail than normal. But we are supporting them how we can. And Montgomery County typically has the most, and they do in this election as well.
And if I could just ask, what are you thinking about for future elections? Obviously, some states have, I take it, you can vote using ballots that are printed out over the Internet, or am I mistaken? What does the future hold?
Well, Mr. Comptroller, it's Linda. The law requires us to make this available to any voter who wants to use it. The origin of it comes from federal law that required the states to have an electronic delivery of blank ballots to our military and overseas citizens. And the General Assembly codified that requirement in Maryland law, but then made the decision that any voter, not just the military and overseas voters, could use it. And so unless the General Assembly changes the law, we will continue to allow anyone who wants to get their ballot delivered electronically to do so.
Yes, I can see that for the long term, but obviously there should have been a big warning here on this thing that if you use the Internet, your vote may not be counted until Christmas, as far as I can tell, because this is going to take a long time to do if you have more than 100,000 and perhaps get another 100,000 where you have to have Republican judge and a Democratic judge handing these things back and forth. I mean, it just sounds tremendously doomed to failure. So I hope in the future there's some way around the situation that exists right now. Isn't this in a huge, intensive labor situation? It sounds like it.
Yes, it is. But to get to your main point here, the Board of Elections adopted a messaging to send to voters to explain to them that if they chose to vote by electronic delivery of a blank ballot, they should be aware that they'd have to be duplicated, and it slows down the canvassing process. Once that message started going out, the request decreased. So.
Okay, that's good. I appreciate that. But in the future, I assume we're going to put some kind of additional caveats on, because I think anybody that's filing their vote or trying to vote over the Internet who understands that this is going to be a much more difficult, labor-intensive process, I assume they would go and do what I'm doing, or what the treasurer and the governor are doing, putting their absentee ballots in drop boxes. That seems like a much more efficient way. Are there other states in the union that are allowing Internet voting without the kind of cumbersome process we're experiencing here in Maryland?
Well, every state has to make it available both to the military, overseas, and disabled voters. I think there are two or three other states where the legislature has expanded it beyond that community, but I'd have to get back to you on that, Mr. Comptroller. I don't, off the top of my head, know who they are.
Okay. So just getting back to my putting my ballot box in the drop box, my ballot in the drop box, I take it there is some system that the Montgomery County State Board of Elections has with you where you actually track and send me an email that, as an average voter, that yes, my ballot has been received, and I think you then are going to send me a second one saying it's been processed. Is that correct?
I'll let Nikki answer the second part of your question, but I will just say if we have your email address, yes, you will get an email. Nikki, where are we at the notification set up?
So we are notifying voters that if we have an email and address on file that the application's been processed, that your ballot is being sent, and the ballot has been received. So those are the three notices. Yes, it's Mr. Comptroller, it's based on information the local boards of elections put in the system that we then grab and send out an email.
That's excellent. So how many of our voting folks do you think you have email addresses for? Ballpark.
I don't know the answer.
10%, 50%,
90%. I don't know.
Well, how many notices have you sent out already?
We've sent out a couple hundred thousand of the ballots. Your ballot is getting ready, and your ballot has been received. A couple hundred thousand of those.
Excellent. Well, just keep us appraised on that if you could. And obviously, there's a voterservices.elections.maryland.gov slant voter search. I mean, honestly, I think it's tremendously optimistic to think people can navigate all this. The treasurer and the governor are more competent on technology than I am, but I hope we are able to learn from all of this what other states that perhaps are more successful at having these virtual elections, which I think is going to be more and more the case down the road. But let me just also reiterate my appreciation to the governor for recruiting election help. This is obviously not particularly a safe place to be on election day. I'm sorry to report that, but the virus is an unbelievable menace out there, and I hope people, you know, respect the their own personal safety. And God bless the people, Governor, that you have recruited. I take it there are a lot of young people who are stepping up and saying, look, we're going to replace some of the folks that may be at risk because of their age or because of underlying conditions. You know, we are really heroes in this. I just hope everybody's going to be very, very careful about the social distancing and the protecting these new recruits. And hats off to you, Governor, for figuring out how to get state employees. I think some folks from the comptroller's office are volunteering. But it's not without risk, let's be honest, and I hope everybody is properly recognized for their courage. Thank you. I will let you go. Linda, I'll see you after the election with my beer, or not my beer, I'm not sure which, but God bless our great state, and I just hope the election is smooth and easily reported on election night to the extent possible.
Thank you. I do too. Thank you very much.
I'll second that as well. Thank you.
Can I second my craft beer commitment?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to commit on here to drinking beer, but you know, maybe I'll come over there with you. Sure. Yeah, look forward to that. Some people may be popping champagne on election night, but beer would be fine with me. So thank you. And are there any other questions?
I'd like to ask DGS a question about the Board of Elections item. And that is, I don't know if anyone there can answer right now, but they could get back to us. The question is why the contract was originally handled as a commodity and not as a service. This question has been raised of me.
Yes, Madam Treasurer, thank you for the question. We can get back to you since that contract was a number of years ago. And there is a simple explanation. Danny Mays, who is our director of procurement, actually probably can answer that because he's addressed that with me before. Danny Mays?
That's terrific. I don't want to keep everybody's time, and I know we support the item.
We'll send you the information.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Governor, if I could finish by saying item two on the agenda is a wetlands license for Living Classrooms. What's Living Classrooms? That's an unbelievably wonderful not-for-profit in Baltimore City. Senator Cory McCrae has been a huge champion of it. It aims to disrupt the cycles of poverty and build stronger, safer, and healthier communities through a wide range of educational programs based on sailing, outdoors work, et cetera. They're doing a great job. They've had an enormous positive impact since 1985. And, Governor, I'm glad that we've got this item on and giving them the opportunity to expand their program because it has been extraordinarily successful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions, or is there a motion to approve the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Is there a second? 3-0. Next we have the DNR real property agenda.
Hi, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 9 items on our real property agenda today. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Good morning, Madam Secretary. Are there any questions on the DNR agenda? Is there
Can
a motion?
Can I just ask how many people have visited state parks and how are we doing?
A lot.
Why did I just interrupt you, Governor, from...
No. That's a good question.
Thank you very much for that question. We are now at over 17 million visitors. Just for comparison purposes, last year we set a record at 14.9 million visitors. So we've well exceeded that record, and it's only September. So visitation has been very high. Our staff has been working very hard, and we're happy to be able to provide some outdoor recreation opportunities for individuals and families during these hard times.
Thank you very much.
Does Lieutenant Governor Rutherford get counted as just visiting one park, or is it all parks that he's visiting?
Yeah, how many times is he being counted? That's a good question.
That's a great question.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Secretary. Any other questions on DNR, or is there a motion?
Would move approval.
3-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have the university system.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. We have 3 items on the agenda today, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Anybody have questions on the university system?
Tom, I don't know if you heard my comment or question to regarding DHCD and its projects, but even more the university, which has probably the most projects of any unit in the state. We're going to have to know what progress you're making towards the electrification of the buildings and the transportation and the goal that some folks have, but it's not in the law yet, of 100% new electric that 100% of the state buildings starting in 2025 or 26 should be by default electric, unless there are clear reasons not to. But at any rate, even if that goal isn't in the law, the goal of greenhouse gas mitigation is a mandate, 40 by 30 or 50 by 30 or 60 by 30. And so it seems to me it's very important to know how the university is meeting that goal. And I believe they are, in fact, quite active. So it'd be, perhaps we hope, good news.
We'd be happy to provide that information to you. We actually do have representation on the state's Green Building Council, and I understand that they are not taking a position on the on this.
But I'm sure they also understand that there is no way we can meet our greenhouse gas mitigation goals without electrifying the building, without from now on building electric heating and air conditioning and illumination, as well as electrification of our fleet. it can't be done.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Unless, Governor, you could persuade someone like Elon Musk to come to Maryland and invent an entirely new way of doing it. That's possible.
I'll give him a call. We'll see what we can come up with.
Yeah, I think he's in Texas right now, but that's all good. I do have a question about item two, Mr. Hickey. This is a request to retroactively approve a $1.6 million modification and increase the one-year not-to-exceed renewal option amount from $4 to $5.5 million. Obviously, this is, in the great scheme of things, not a huge amount of money, but the revised contract amount will be $15.1 million. It's my understanding it's for mechanical contracting services for construction projects and service repair and maintenance at USM institutions across the state. Obviously, I have no problem with that. However, according to the information provided by USM, the reasoning behind the $1.6 million increase in the contract cost compared to the initial amount that we approved in 2018 at this board was due, and I quote right here, to a breakdown in the management of the contract and tracking of the spending. That obviously raises some red flags. It's quite disconcerting to learn that the tracking of the costs associated with this contract somehow got off track. Could you just explain to me what happened and why we hopefully are not going to see any other recurrences of this?
First of all, I just want to apologize to the board. I take these items very seriously, and in the 5 years I've been here, I've never brought a retroactive request to this board. And so I apologize to you. It's unacceptable, and I'm going to ensure it doesn't happen again. And for your specific question about what happened at College Park, I will turn it over to Kim Watson, who is the director of procurement for the University of College Park. She should be on the line.
And I am on the line, Tom. Good morning, Governor Hogan, Madam Treasurer, and Comptroller Francho. I believe this is our first meeting, and it's the first time I've come before you. It's not the most opportune way to go about this. This is a situation where we had been manually recording what the totals were in an Excel spreadsheet to try and stay on top of these things. Somewhere in the midst of those recordings of the task orders that were issued against these contracts, we had incorrect recording. The steps we're taking presently is I'm working with our systems team and our financial system to devise a field where we have stops on the POs and spend limits so that we cannot overspend or issue task orders beyond the spend limit that's established. But we believe we have a solution so this does not happen again.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy to move approval of USM agenda if it's appropriate.
Great. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Vote is 3-0. Thank you, Tom. Now we're going to move forward to the Department of Transportation agenda. Secretary Slater.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 11 items for your consideration today, as well as myself, as well as representatives, are here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Good to see you. I just have a quick question about item 7M, the $285,000 plus modification to SHA contract to maintain and repair highway street lighting at various locations in Prince George's County. And my understanding is that this is needed in large part to cover the impact of an enormous amount of theft of light fixtures or light fixture components. And I just wondered if you could, expand on your efforts to try to ensure that this doesn't continue to happen.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that question. So we've had a large rash of of people stealing the copper wire out of our lighting systems. So whether they're street lights or pedestrian lights, those types of things, we'll go and discover an outage, and we'll get there and we'll find that they've taken kind of really detailed efforts in taking the copper wiring out of that. So we've been working with Maryland State Police, as well as some of our own forces, Maryland Transportation Authority. We've been able to apprehend a couple of folks doing this, and we're looking at efforts on the best way to kind of tackle this long term, but it's an ongoing issue for us, and those lights are directly related to safety on our system, but it's pretty disturbing to get out there and find out. And the reality is that amateurs are not doing this. You have to really know how to be a contractor to install these types of things. So somebody with experience on hot wiring kind of taking those things out of those lighting systems, but it's a real issue and frankly creating a safety issue on our system.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a lot of money. It sounds like a pretty serious criminal operation. So hopefully we can, are we cooperating with Prince George's County on it, or is it just the state agencies that are handling it?
We're working across the board. Of course, you know, a lot of the local jurisdictions and their police forces trying to get the word out and get them to look for, and don't be shy about stopping if you see someone, no matter what the vehicle looks like on the side of the road. You know, we have permits for folks that are out there that we cross-reference, but just kind of getting some awareness out there for our law enforcement partners that if you see somebody working on the side of the road, don't be shy about stopping and saying, hey, let me see your permit, those types of things.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, thank you.
Interesting. If I could ask a question, is it something happening elsewhere around the state in other jurisdictions?
Yeah. It's happening around the state for the most part. We've been seeing it in every jurisdiction. We had a large piece around the Beltway and around Interstate 97, those types of areas, but it's really all over the state. So I've been having some conversations with some of my counterparts in the other states to see if they're dealing with it, and I've gotten kind of mixed answers back. Some are, some are not, but certainly it's the copper wire theft has been kind of an issue outside of transportation for a while, but now they're just kind of getting into the lighting systems and the transportation systems.
And I hesitate to ask because they may just steal the cameras, but is there camera technology that can help law enforcement get a handle on the situation?
It depends on the location. So what our camera systems that are on our roadways to respond to incidents and those types of things, they're not camera systems that record. They just stream so that we can respond to incidents. But if they're in the vicinity of an area where maybe a business or something like that has a camera, then we can certainly take advantage of that.
Thank you for bringing it up, Governor. I didn't even realize that this was obviously law enforcement and is a big deterrent if some of these folks get arrested and are brought to justice, I hope, hopefully, for theft. I think that may be a help to you as far as reducing this.
Absolutely. Right. We're still reaching out to the scrap metal dealers, those types of folks, to flag those if people are bringing that type of wiring in so that we can open that line of communication up.
Right. Is there any way to, going forward, somehow mark the wiring so that it be identified as publicly owned?
Sure. We hadn't really thought about that marking piece because what they do is they kind of strip it down and it just becomes a pile of kind of blank wire. We've been focusing more on kind of the awareness on the law enforcement side, but also the people that are buying it, so their awareness is there, you know, kind of questioning almost like a registry type thing. So folks are saying, hey, where are you getting this type of wiring? But certainly something to explore.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any other questions on the secretary, on the transportation agenda?
Move approval.
Great. Is there a second? Very good. The vote is 3-0. And now we're going to move on to Department of General Services.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Governor. Before I make my intro, because I would anticipate a question from Madam Treasurer about sustainability, I took the liberty, and I'm going to send you this report. Madam Treasurer, this was a report issued by General Services in response to Governor's executive order in 2019 concerning reducing energy consumption of state-owned buildings.
and we just completed that report and issued it. I will send it to you, and it's a comprehensive report.
Thank you.
Again, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Maryland Department of General Services. Today we are presenting 16 items for your consideration, including 3 supplementals, and we are available to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you, Secretary Churchill. Any questions on DGS?
Very, very quickly, Mr. Secretary, speaking of energy savings, item 3, the new roofs for a large number of facilities. It's not a huge item, the amount of money, but my understanding is that you've got 16 buildings which will now have more energy-efficient roofs. Is that right?
Yes, Madam Treasurer, and we do have our program manager available to answer any specific questions concerning those buildings.
No, I just think if that's what it is and that is what it looks like, that's a good thing.
Well, roof replacements, by its nature, they're going to be more energy efficient. So we're very proud of the projects that are being presented.
Thank you.
Well, you might include a report on that along with the other material you're sending, because I do think you'll see that it's a good story.
Can I just comment that my great predecessor, Louis Goldstein, is happy right now up in heaven because somebody's talking about roofs. He didn't like flat roofs.
Roofs. Oh, yeah. And he was right, too.
Yeah, but Madam Treasurer, thank you for your advocacy of basically protecting the planet. And Governor, I had just a comment about item 7. This is for a renewal option, Department of Human Services, for a group called Family Tree, which provides services to at-risk families, especially in the area of preventing child abuse. I believe their focus is Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Prince George's County. Obviously, it's something very important, and with the COVID pandemic, it's forced everybody to stay at home. So one of the big problems there is increased domestic violence and child abuse going unreported. And just want to thank your administration, Governor, and the department for continuing the relationship with this important and consequential work by the organization, the Family Tree. Great item.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions, or is there a motion on DGS?
I do have an item on 9 IT.
Yes, Mr. Comptroller, which item on 9?
Task orders 2.1 and 3.1.
Okay, we have Julia Fisher, Director, Data Services at the Department of Information. We also have Secretary Leahy.
Okay. So this is the ESRI group, which I've had on my radar screen since the last administration, where, amazingly, a single big contract was awarded to them, and then there was, some kind of speech that was given for a large amount of money, and it just looked very unseemly as far as being on the level. But nonetheless, back in 2019, I put my sword back in the sheath because you guys said we have 5 master contractors under one task order, 12 master contractors for the other one, that were deemed qualified to submit bids for the services. So that kind of addressed the semi-corrupt situation that was with the previous administration. But then the documents for this task order now indicate that despite all the master contractors and others, there's only one contractor, ESRI, that company that paid the extraordinary amount of money. There's only one contractor, ESRI, was eligible to bid. So why is that the case?
Julia, are you on the call? I just want to make sure you're here before I start speaking.
I am, Secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, Governor. It is not my understanding that they were the only companies eligible to bid. However, as I understand it, and I'm still doing further research, which I will certainly share with you, Esri, like IBM, is a behemoth in this industry. And in fact, these contracts are for maintenance that only they provide on the licensed software we purchase from them. There are, as you stated, a number of other companies that are in our program that are eligible to provide GIS services. And in fact, there have been a number of companies that have provided services, but the amounts have typically, as I understand it, been under the threshold in the past to come to this board. But as I said, I am researching that presently, and I hope to have a definitive answer to you in the next few days. Julia, what would you like to add about the specifics? Because you've been here since this process began in 2015.
Thank you, Secretary. And thank you, Board, for allowing me to address this topic this morning. As you know, GIS has had a long and very strong existence within the state of Maryland. We have been using the technology to support any number of agencies. We have 50, 60 different units, agencies, all the way from the election mapping that is currently available to assist Marylanders in determining where their voting and voting drop-off locations are, as well as I want to point out most recently, the GIS platform has been used for hosting the coronavirus.maryland.gov site, which has seen more than 8 million visitors since it was launched in March. So I believe that the efforts of the state employees who are using this technology are good and pure to serve those Marylanders and the citizens of Maryland. Esri is, as the Secretary mentioned, the leader within the industry. Their technology has been utilized within the state for decades. We have hundreds additional websites that have this technology launched within them. We have thousands of state employees who are trained in utilizing this technology. And as a result, we hope to continue the great work that each and every one of those individuals has been able to do with these tools. It is that reason why we want to continue with the platforms that we have been using. We have seen great success in the past and would like to continue to see those successes continue in the future. So,
okay, thank you for that. That's helpful. But why in the briefing documents that we have, why is this listed as one single qualified master contractor? When you have, over the years, described five master contractors on a one task order and 12 under the other one, where you're coming at twice and saying there's only a single qualified master contractor.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. We wanted to ensure that our state partners had access to other GIS providers who have areas of expertise throughout the broader GIS industry. However, in the areas that the state is primarily applying GIS, Esri, again, is the leader. They do not have any resellers. So although we do have a number of master contractors who are available to provide their software, Esri, again, is the one we have found to be the most reliable and had the most success with. They do not have resellers.
So why don't we just bring this before the board as a sole source contract? What is the problem with that? I mean, I understand completely what you're saying, that this is software that has a proprietary interest and it's spread throughout the state agencies and nobody else can maintain it. But in that instance, generally, it's a sole source contract that's brought before us.
Mr. Comptroller, I agree with you completely. And as I said, I am attempting to research how it has not come forward in that way to the board.
Okay, well, I would like to defer this for a couple of weeks if my colleagues were favorable, because, you know, this, it's not usual that a sole source contract or a single bid contract has $150,000 speakers fees for Maryland officials. That's my problem with this. So I would defer to my colleagues, but if I could investigate it with you, I would be grateful. If I can't get that delay, then I'm happy to vote against it. But I find it to be a troubling option.
Mr. Secretary, can you maybe address the comptroller's concern there? Because I believe we've already delayed this once before, and there's some deadline coming up tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes, Governor. Mr. Comptroller, I assure you that, as I said at the beginning, the proprietary nature of this software and its widespread embedment in the state of Maryland does make it a critical tool for a number of tools we are utilizing with regard to COVID, all of our mapping, all of our attempts to create certain types of data that are visual as well as numeric. And to delay it further, I believe will not address the concerns you have raised. The software is, as we've said, licensed only by Esri, and this is to continue to maintain our operational status with that software, which we will continue to use into the indefinite future.
Since these folks are so ubiquitous, I guess, now with state agencies and we're so dependent on them, I'm sure they would more than willingly continue for a month or so until, as you say, you're investigating it. I'd like to at least take a look at it again, because last time I voted in favor of it, and I was under it was not correct information, I guess, that I was given at that point. So I would still urge my colleagues to let me have a couple of weeks to take a look at it. I don't think anything bad is going to happen.
Well, we will have to bring it as a retro at that point, because the contract expires on the 8th.
So. I have no problem with that, but I think, you know, you're investigating it, I'm investigating it. I didn't get this particular explanation, and I assume in the future this is going to be a sole source contract, not a single bid contract. And but I also want to resolve my concern about the optics of it.
Certainly, that is my intent, sir. And to your point that you raise regularly, to the extent any other vendors become adept at this particular technology, we will certainly compete it vigorously.
Anyway, if you guys, my colleagues, I'll just leave it up to you, but I think it's appropriate to take it.
I believe, as long as you can bring it as a retro contract next time, I mean, I think we have to approve this contract. I happen to not all have the same problems going back to whenever it was, 8 or 9 years ago. If the comptroller wants more time to look at it, and it will not impede any action forward actually by our state agencies.
Well, that is, Julia, will this have an impact? Are they going to stop providing services?
For the SaaS renewal, the company does have contractually the right to shut off the service starting tomorrow. That, unfortunately, is the platform that hosts the coronavirus.maryland.gov website.
We do not want anything shut off. At least I don't. I have no problem proving this right now, but I have no problem giving time to the comptroller if it doesn't harm things. Cutting off the platform would harm things, I believe.
Right. Well, I would hope they would not, but as this arose yesterday, I have not had contact with them to see what their position would be. Mr. Comptroller, I assure you, I will provide you any information I find at the earliest possible date, and I commit going forward that so long as we are dealing with a circumstance like this with Esri, it will go forward as a sole source contract. And I apologize for you not having been given proper information in the past.
Well, I think that the right thing to do would be to defer this, and I don't think any harm will come from it. And, the fact that it's before us with a deadline of tomorrow is just another reason that this should be looked at. And I don't mean to get exercised.
It was before us before, and it was already delayed, I think. But look, I share all of your concerns about the original contract that you and the treasurer were involved in with the previous governor. But now it seems as if this vendor is critically important to agencies all across the state. And I also think we need to get back and address some of the questions. But as the treasurer pointed out, we don't want to put ourselves in a position where all of our state agencies could potentially be without this vendor while we're dealing in the middle of a state of emergency with a pandemic. I don't think that they would do that, but they contractually have the right to do that. We know we're going to approve it anyway, and rather than coming back in 2 weeks, I would say we should move forward and then still address all the concerns, because I don't think anything's going to change over the next 2 weeks other than us not having the service.
There's another issue that's popped up here, which is that the item we voted on in 2019 was wrong, and that needs to be corrected legally. So I don't want to end on a down note, but I just think we need to take a couple of weeks here. This group has a monopoly power. I assume they understand exactly what I'm talking about, and we can approve it at the next meeting, but obviously takes two votes.
I'd hate to see what happens if they cut off all of our critical work that we're doing tomorrow, and then I don't know how we would explain that.
Well, what would that say? Obviously, we use them in the comptroller's office, but what would that say about this group?
Yeah, well, I agree, but I don't want to take the chance.
Well, then maybe the agency should bring this with more than a one-day gun to our head.
I think they've been trying to move it forward for a while, and they've gone through all of their extension, their options, and now we're at the end of the line.
And it ends tomorrow.
That's correct. We have brought this matter before, attempting to bring it before the board, Mr. Comptroller.
When was it brought before, and what was the problem?
Julia, what was the initial time it was brought up this past summer?
We had the initial renewal for August 1st, and just through circumstances mostly connected to the pandemic and people continuing to adjust to new workflows, we did not meet, critical deadlines.
Yeah, let me say for the record, that wasn't me or my office. We are being confronted with a incorrect description, and it also is a mistake on the 2019 contract that we approved, Governor, and I think it needs to be looked at and corrected, and I can't imagine the company, after its long history of partnership with the state, is going to pull the plug. But
what is the nature of the error in the contract?
We voted for two bids, but there was only one bid.
We voted for two bids.
Yeah, it needs to be.
Yeah. What is, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the secretary knows what I'm talking about. It's, you know, we voted two contracts and there was only one bid. I don't know, but it needs to be, it's probably a technical issue, but it needs to be corrected. But I'm more concerned about just making sure that everything is correct here and on the level, because you know, I have confidence in Secretary Leahy, Secretary Churchill. I just want to take a look at it.
To answer your question, Madam Treasurer, it's my understanding that the 2019 item that was brought to the board listed the number of bids as two, when in fact there was only one bidder, the vendor in question today, that bid on the contract for the task order, purchase order request for proposals.
And as I recall, that was where I famously said I'm putting my sword away, because it was a competitive bid. There wasn't a competitive bid.
So is there a motion on the floor?
Yes, I would move to defer this for 2 weeks.
Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, okay. 2-1. I'm going to vote against you on this one. I don't want to see our whole state shut down. So with that, that concludes the
Mr. Governor.
Another question on another item for do it.
If I may have a moment of personal privilege, since we've all been talking about sustainability, yesterday we received the Center for Digital Government's annual survey results. We, again, for the second cycle in a row, got the highest grade the state has ever gotten for IT. But, Madam Treasurer, you will be happy to hear that they have other awards called the top three that they will not specify who was first, second, or third. But we finished in the top three for the sustainability for IT conservation, environmental management, and state modernization of physical assets. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
That's terrific. Congratulations, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you so much.
Glad to hear that. That really is very good news. And we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks with the retro contract that you indicated you could bring. Thanks.
You know, Secretary Leahy, if you had brought that up a little earlier, the treasurer may not have seconded the comptroller's motion.
I should have, sir, and I'll remember that going forward.
Yeah.
And Mr. Comptroller, I will be in touch with your folks.
You again in 2 weeks.
Members, before you adjourn, if you could just clarify the record, I'd still appreciate it. The motion for the item is on Secretary is two, is on sub items 2.1 and 3.1.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
And the motion is to pull them out of the agenda.
The board staff to look at the 2019 issue I raised as to the misinformation that we voted on.
We have to make sure that this contract, what we're voting on in 2 weeks, is in fact doesn't incorporate an error that was unintended.
The was on the board item itself. The item that was submitted to the board, the record of the Board of Public Works is incorrect, is my understanding. That the record of the Board of Public Works listed two bids on the 2019 item, when in fact there was only one bid that would not impact the actual underlying contract.
Thank you.
So are we pulling out that one item to have a separate vote we voted on? Now we have to vote on the rest of the do-it agenda. Is that correct?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye. All right, well,
before we go, Mr. Governor, I understand that Mr. James Pontejour is going to be busy this weekend. Is that right? And John, do you want to say anything about it?
That is correct. James Pointe-Dior, the board's operations manager, who makes all of this possible, all of this virtual meetings that the board stopped and turned on a dime after 156 years of meeting in person and was able to start meeting virtually. It was all due to James Pointe-Dior, and this is a very, very happy week because this Saturday he is celebrating his wedding. So it's a thank you, Madam Treasurer, for pointing it out. We all could not be happier for James.
Well, I'm sure we all send him our congratulations and his bride also.
Thank you, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. That's quite a surprise. I really appreciate it. And yes, I'm getting married this Saturday. I'm very excited. Thank you, Mr. Gontram, for this very delightful surprise. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Can I make a motion?
Thank you. Congratulations.
I consider marriage to be a great institution, and I think all three of us are in agreement on that. But good luck, James. All the best.
Thank you so much, Mr. Comptroller. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Congratulations. Good luck. With that, I think that concludes the meeting for today. Thank you all very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.